Stump, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was a handout, and it may have been handed out. And what Senate File 2480 is requesting of your committee is a change in the TIF regulations. And it's for the city of East Grand Forks. And what the city has requested is to allow them to use some of the TIF proceeds to expand the Red River Valley the Red River Valley campgrounds. It's the state recreation area. That's what I was looking for. And if I could just step back for just a couple of seconds. In 1997, when East Grand Forks was flooded, a good section of the city, about 390 some homes, were totally inundated with water, that one section of the city. And so the FEMA and the Corps would not allow those homes to be rebuilt, but they were basically all ruined. But the infrastructure for those homes in that part of the city stayed in place. And so the city, the Department of Natural Resources, decided that that portion of the city could become a park. And actually, the original discussions was that it would become a state park and allow they had trails, a whole host of different services. It was very close to downtown. And as it was with the economy and the change in a few changes, that didn't materialize, but it did materialize to become a state recreation area, and it's been very successful. They've consistently have been making money in the area of parks. Most of the parks do not make money in the state of Minnesota, but only a handful, and this is one of them that does. The problem they have run into, though, is that they always have a greater demand for places for campers and a greater need for more campsites with services. And so what they'd like to do is to use some of the TIF proceeds to expand their campsites. And that's basically what the request is in Senate File 2480.
Senator Stump, is the request to use the excess increment for capital expenditures or for operating?
Mr. Chairman, the request is to use those proceeds for capital expenditures to increase the campsites that can be used. They are also, as the letter describes, working with the DNR. The DNR currently gives them a portion of, I believe it's $109,000 per year to operate the campsite, but that just basically covers a small part of it. So the city's actually been investing more money into the campsite, but they would like to use it because of the budget being very tight and everything. They'd like to use the TIF, some of the TIF proceeds, to expand the campsites.
Senator Stump, do we have any idea how much excess tax increment there is that they'd be expending annually?
Mr. Chairman, I don't. It's a very good question.
Doesn't seem like it says anything in their letter.
No, it actually doesn't.
Well, maybe you could just kind of get that for the committee. It would be helpful for us to know how much we're talking about.
Okay.
And how many years are left on the? Do we know how many years are left on the district? Maybe both. How many years are left on the district, and how much increment we're talking about using on an annual basis.
Okay.
Senator
I will find that information out and get it to you. Okay.
Anything further to add?
No, that's all.
If not, Chair Lee's over Senate File 2480 for possible inclusion. Senator Sum, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wicker.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Senate File 2938 would extend the Oakdale Tax Increment Financing District, and specifically it would have a significant impact for Oakdale Mall, and this would take increment from a project across the street near Kmart and help in the expansion and vision that the city leaders have worked on. We want to personally thank you, Mr. Chair. You've been out to this area more than once and have inspected it after the city council and the mayor had a workshop and community leaders, and so we appreciate your taking the active interest in the needs of our area. I have with me the city manager, Craig Waldron, and also from community development, Bob Streetar, to briefly highlight the need for extending this district from 2016 to 2024, and the key is for jobs, and we'll show why that reality is getting close. So, Mr. Chair, if I could have Craig Waldron address.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, and again, thank you, Mr. Chair, for your past visit and support on this project. I'll turn it over to Bob with respect.
Mr. Waldron, we should have your name and your title for the record.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's Craig Waldron, City Administrator for the City of Oakdale.
Thank you.
Just a few highlights, and then Bob can give you some more detail, but we now are in a position where we have a purchase agreement on this site. We have the developers in place, Wellington and Ryan, and we've completed our financial analysis, and that's why we're back here with the extension. We can have jobs going this summer. We would use the extension for public improvements, so with any luck, we'd be out there this summer and in the ground doing the public improvements. With that, I'll defer to Bob on some of the specifics and the tax generated, et cetera.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Streeter. I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Oakdale. Just a couple highlights. The last time we were here, the mall was occupied by about six tenants. Today, it's closed. There are no tenants. Three of them have been relocated within the city. The mall's not permitted to reopen because it violates fire codes, as the property owner is not able to provide fire suppression. In addition, the building owner is not able to heat the building. Thirdly, the building owner has not paid property taxes since 2007. Consequently, he owes over $400,000 in back property taxes to city, county, and school district. The plan we're contemplating includes somewhere between 125 and 140,000 square feet of commercial space, right around 200 units of senior rental and general rental housing. What we're asking for today is to extend the Bergen Plaza TIF district beginning 2017 through 2024, which is right across the street, and we want to use that money to pay for internal road infrastructure, two roads internal to the site, a right-hand turn lane, a stoplight, and bearing underground utilities that are along 10th Street. We've done some estimating with Ryan Construction, and the demolition of the building will employ 10 persons approximately. The public improvements will employ around 80 folks, and the private construction, which is valued at $40 million, will employ or will result in 450,000 hours of labor for folks in different trades. And with that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Streeter, is there a development agreement on the parcel already?
Mr. Chair, there is no development agreement. We're working on that now. We will have one before July 13th of this year. That's our expected closing date.
Do we know if Ryan's able to finance the project?
They've indicated to us, Mr. Chair, they are able to obtain the financing. We've been working with them, Mr. Chair, probably for about the last 5 months on developing a site plan and cost estimates, and I don't think they would be spending that time if they couldn't finance it.
Mr. Chair, that concludes our presentation, and I also want to share the Mayor of Oakdale's deep appreciation in City Council, and we recently had a workshop, and they sincerely appreciate the support the legislature has provided so far and your personal visits out there.
It's members, it's definitely a lot easier to understand some of these TIF requests when you've actually visited the site. And I remember visiting the Oakdale Mall site, much like I remember going to Burnsville and looking at their redevelopment of a quarry down there. It's nothing quite like seeing why a special request is needed. So any questions?
Chairman
Pogler.
I apologize if you said this on the front end. The original mall was built what year?
That, Mr. Chair, Senator Pogler-Miller, that was built approximately 20 years ago now.
Was it subsidized in any way?
No. No.
Thank you.
Senator Weir, thank you. Charlie is over Senate File 2938 for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much.
Senator Pogler-Miller, I learned something when I went out to this project. I actually rent very close to the city of Oakdale in North Maplewood, and I never thought I would see in what I always envisioned was a pretty healthy suburban community like Oakdale, that they'd have a huge mall in the middle of their city sitting empty. And we walked through it, and there was water running through the roof, and it was quite something to see firsthand. I guess perception isn't everything. Thank you, Mr. Waldron and Mr. Streeter. Senator Saksok? Senator Saksok, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This morning we're presenting Senate File 2926. This will be the third TIF bill of the day for you. This bill will make some adjustments to the city of Cohasset. The city worked with the auditor's office to identify the problem that they are having. The language before you will address the situation. And with me today is Susan Harper, city administrator from Cohasset, to help answer any questions. Mr. Chair, Ms. Harper may want to give a brief presentation.
Ms. Harper, what are we going to do with the money that we transfer?
There are two projects that are waiting. One is a railroad, a new road across the railroad tracks with the BNSF to access land where TIF 3-1 is. And then there is a developer who signed a letter of intent to put up assisted living, a 24 to 36 unit building with possibility of regular apartments. We haven't completed it, but in order to do that, we have to put the road in. So aside from that being a capital project we're looking at, we also made some mistakes in the past before I was there and didn't have the interfund loan.
Mr. Chair,
So Senator Saksok, is this money already been transferred? What's the?
No, sir, or Mr. Chair.
But as you said, Mr. Chair, it's helpful if you've seen where the situation is. As you come in,
but it hasn't repaid itself yet. This would let the city repay itself. Let the district repay the city.
So, Ms. Harper, is the work done?
Mr. Chair, no.
Mr. Chair, as you come into Cohasset from the east, County Road 62, it's the first stoplight. This will allow a left turn, and this is where there will be a railroad crossing will be abandoned, which is and this new one will be put in. So it'll be a busy county road will go straight across and across the railroad tracks. And there will and this will bring on development along the Mississippi River. It's a beautiful sight. So.
So the bill says the city has needs to transfer an amount out of the TIF districts equal in the amount that's already been transferred from the general fund for the expenditures. So the general fund money has from the city has been appropriated for the project, and you're just looking to backfill the general fund, or what exactly does this mean? Ms. Harper?
Mr. Chair, can I give you a little background on the
Please.
Two districts? Excuse me. What happened is that Cohasset in 07 paid off TIF 2-1's $166,000 bond. We will, and at that time, they never wrote an interfund resolution or agreement in order to have that money come back from the increment. So the increment is basically just it's up to like $30,000. It will never pay back the amount over the life of the TIF district. It'll never pay back the $166,000 that was expended just to pay off the bond, let alone all the other infrastructure. And in 3-1, and I've worked with Senator Saxhog and the auditor's office to try to understand how we got to this situation in Cohasset. In 3-1, we put in over $1 million of infrastructure and a $300,000 loan, and the people at that time put an IRS resolution in, which doesn't solve the problem according to the auditor's office. So that money that we put in isn't coming back into the general fund because they did not write the interfund loan agreement. So if we could do the interfund loan agreement ex post facto, this would not be a problem. But those are the two reasons that that money should be repaying. We should be repaying ourselves because we did not bond for 3-1. We did for 2-1. So I would say this is to rectify some of the mistakes that were made by people who were trying to do the right thing, but they missed a piece.
And Ms. Harper, how much money are we talking about?
Well, the one TIF-2 is has 14 more years, and that's $126,000 on the increment average of almost $9,000 a year. And TIF 3-1 would be, well, it's an unknown because that can expand, but if it just stayed static, it's open for another 22 years, and that would be about $1,034,000, which doesn't still cover what the general fund put into the projects to make them viable. But if we do apply that to the Byer Road project, it does open up many, many parcels by the Mississippi and facilitate the growth of this one project, which was built 10 years ago with the promise of that new road going in, which we've never had the funds to build, and we're trying to build it this year. And so Senator Saxhog knows how much I've been scrambling to try to find money to apply to this project.
We'll have to, I haven't looked at the auditor's report yet, but we'll take a look at it and see if we can figure out how we can help. But this was flagged by the state auditor?
Mr. Chair, no, sir. I approached them trying to understand it, and it's not that there were an errors according to what they said. It was my saying, what am we going to do with this increment? And she said, well, we've had numbers of conversations and a history of emails. And she said, this is what you have to do. I mean, ultimately, we got to special legislation because there was no other way to solve the financial problems of the city being repaid into the general fund by the, you know, usually you say the bond will be repaid, you'll dedicate it to this. Well, they didn't bond, so therefore there's no dedication to this increment. And the TIF District 2 is an apartment building. It's just this, it's not districts like the metropolitan area. It's this tiny little thing. And 3 is a number of acres larger, but it's still not a massive district. And so there is nothing to continue to utilize the funds for to build anything else. And I think it should go back to the general fund because that's where the original payment came from.
So they used cash rather than bonded?
For 3. For 2, they did bond.
Any questions, members? Chair Lee is over Senate File 2926 for possible inclusion. Ms. Harper, thank you for coming down. Senator Sexsock, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Is he here?
Yeah, he's here.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Senate File 2987 is simply a bill that attempts to create a tax increment district in the city of St. Charles to help provide for some opportunity of business employment and you know, try to help gain a few businesses for a town that lost their largest employer due to a fire here last year. Mr. Chairman, I think the committee is well aware of the plight of the city of St. Charles, and you know, you've been you know, very accommodating over the past few years, especially you know, those years starting with the flood back in 07. And this is just one way that you know, we feel that the city of St. Charles will be able to help themselves, and that's what it's all about. There apparently there is a fiscal note behind this, but we don't have it yet, Senator Bach.
That's the next part. They haven't done it. It's not here yet.
Oh. Yeah. It seems, if I remember right, Senator Murphy, didn't we score this at about the sales tax exemption at about a $2 million cost when the meat processing plant was anticipating it being rebuilt? And I guess my question kind of was, when the forecast came out, was what did the Department of Finance do? I think the plant had already announced they weren't going to rebuild. So what I don't know is if that $2 million that was earmarked in the forecast for that purpose was actually canceled or not as a part of the forecast. Do you have any idea? Is the $2 million still there so there's not a fiscal note, or did Finance cancel it when they found out the plant wasn't going to be rebuilt? Do we know?
Mr. Chairman, I know that there was a cancellation someplace along the line, but I'm not sure if that's the one you're talking about.
It was a cancellation of the $2 million, and it was just an oversight that revenue and some missed this TIF proposal had sales tax. So we just missed it. We're estimating that we'll have some revenue as soon as possible.
They are working on the estimate, we understand, Senator Murphy, right?
Yes. But Mr. Chairman, the bill is is fairly boilerplate, and I think this is kind of the way most of the TIF districts are. There is a at the bottom of the page. It's let's see what I think some of the
right now the current law.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think Mrs. Offit probably have to explain what that last provision means.
Sir, maybe this would give the city of St. Charles some pretty broad authority about what to expend the increment on in that economic development district.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's the bottom there, that expansion of
intent.
The use.
Do they have anything kind of in mind that they're courting? I know I've met with the mayor of St. Mm-hmm. Charles, and I understand how concerned they are about losing their largest employer. I was very disappointed too to read that they had made a decision not to rebuild. But is there anything in the pipeline?
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chairman, they do have several nibbles right now. I mean, I'm afraid I can't provide you with anything more than that, other than I know that there's been five or six of discussions going on with five or six different businesses, and you know, hopefully they'll be fruitful. And I think one of the things is that they want to set this TIF district up, you know, on the south end of town, which is very close to the interstate. You know, the north end of town has Highway 14. The south end has the interstate. And, you know, these businesses are, you know, they're production businesses, so they need that access to the transportation facilities. So it works out well, and I think that's one of the reasons why they've had as many, you know, inquiries as to, you know, what they want to do. And as soon as they made it known that they wanted to open up a business park under a tax increment financing arrangement, and then some of the other help that we've tried to provide them with, you know, those requests for information went up. So I think they've got a pretty good chance of being very successful down there, and this is one tool that they'll be able to use.
Senator Murphy, a lot of infrastructure that has to be put in for this, the boundary of this new district?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there is some infrastructure that would have to be put in. To the extent, I don't know. All I know is that about 80% of the former utility bill to the city was paid by that one business, and so that's been a huge hit to the city per se, but you know, they reached down and grabbed hold of their bootstraps and gave a good yank, and they're back in business, and they want to, you know, provide their community with some jobs and business activity.
Senator Murphy, I know I've driven through St. Charles on 14. How many? What's the population?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, now you're asking me. That's
is it more than 1,000?
Oh yeah, Mr. Chairman, it's more than 1,000. But I can't tell you the exact number. I can't even tell you how many people live on my block. I'm sorry, but
well,
it's too early in the morning. I haven't had 5 buckets of coffee.
We're going to find out when the census
the sun's
comes
in my
out,
eye.
Sir Murphy.
Yeah, the census would definitely tell us. So.
Well, Senator Murphy, I think the request on the use of the increment is probably a little bit too broad, but I understand the situation, and I do want to give them some additional flexibility, but we'll see if we can figure out where we can give them a little bit of authority outside of the current law relative to a new economic development district, because I think everybody understands what happened down in the city of St. Charles. So, and we'll wait for that revenue, the fiscal note on it, to see what this would cost.
Sounds like
Senator
a good idea.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy. Does this have any interaction with that request for the, remember you were here earlier with that request for that money that was going to go to the school that we're now looking at trying to figure out the transfer to the city? Mm-hmm. Does this relate to that at all?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, that's my understanding, is that this is all one package being moved forward in different parts.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions, members? If not, Chair Lee is over Senate File 2987 for possible inclusion. Senator Murphy, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Foley? Senator Foley, welcome to the Tax Committee. Senate File 2829.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a long time since I've been in the Tax Committee. It's about 10 or 12 years ago. So you have to forgive me for not being full of the protocol. So I do have Senate File 2829, and well, I can explain some of this. Perhaps it might be better if I have one or more of the council people in the city of Coon Rapids.
Yeah, through the period. Yeah.
Senator, thank you. Scott Schulte, Coon Rapids City Council. First of all, what we're looking for here, and with me is Matt Fulton, the city manager from Coon Rapids. And Mr. Chair and members of the committee, what we're looking for is the extension of some districts, 9 of them, We're not looking for essentially any new districts, just to extend these districts to reuse the money, the increment, to rebuild the infrastructure in Coon Rapids Boulevard. It is our economic development corridor through Coon Rapids. That's very old. It's 50 years old now. And the infrastructure in the roadway is deteriorating. Because of that, we've lost businesses. They've all moved out to Highway 10. What we'd like to do is reinvest in that boulevard. We could, by our calculations, we could bring in 5,700 new jobs to Coon Rapids and to Coon Rapids Boulevard by reinvesting in that infrastructure. One of our concerns is if we don't get these TIF districts extended, we may be forced to use federal dollars in this project, which would require us to put up sound walls on Coon Rapids Boulevard. Now, it's a 45-mile-an-hour commuter thoroughfare, and again, economic roadway. With sound walls, we feel we would lose those 5,700 jobs and probably considerably more as businesses would continue to move from Coon Rapids Boulevard. I think at this point I would like to defer to Matt Fulton, our city manager. He has probably better details and more information than I may be able to present.
Good morning, committee members. Thank you for letting us be here. I'm sorry, Matt Fulton. I'm the city manager in Coon Rapids. Thanks for the opportunity to meet with you this morning. Councilmember Schulte summarized it quite well. Like most communities, one of the greatest priorities that we have as a fully developed community is how do we go about continuing to build our property tax base, creating new economic opportunities and new jobs. Coon Rapids is 50 years old, as Councilmember Schulte indicated. It's fully developed. Coon Rapids Boulevard, in addition to being a very important transportation corridor, also ends up to be one of the remaining economic corridors that at one time was a very vibrant corridor, but it's 50 years old, and a lot of the parcels have now gone underutilized. They've gone vacant. Businesses have actually left. And so it ends up to be an area where there are great opportunities moving forward. And as Councilmember Schulte indicated, we did an analysis along that 7-mile stretch to try to indicate if you were able to build out, based upon the planning that we've done already to date, if you were able to build out those areas, there are significant economic opportunities along the boulevard. I was hoping to have a representative from Mercy Hospital here, who's our major employer in town, and could talk about the economic impacts on Mercy Hospital specifically. But the legislation that we're requesting is really to help us to deal with the infrastructure of Coon Rapids Boulevard, because as all of you know, getting somebody to reinvest in a community is based upon the ability to move along the corridor in a smooth and safe fashion, as well as to create an atmosphere that is supportive of economic development. It's a county boulevard, and so we've been working with the county and the school district for that matter, recognizing that if the county went through their normal procedures, they would use federal funding. Those federal funds would require us to deal with sound wall requirements, and the inclusion of sound walls on this particular corridor would go directly counter to the community's goals of trying to generate new jobs and economic development. And so the only alternative is that we try to find an alternative funding source. The use of these tax increment districts, which were established in the early 80s and under current law are allowed to pool, would allow us to gather around $22 million, which is very close to the sum of the cost of the project, not including the utilities, which would also have to be dealt with. But it provides a local option and a local alternative for helping to deal with the infrastructure and thereby create an economic development atmosphere that we think is really consistent with what the community is interested in. Timing is really important, though, from a variety of different aspects. It's important and it's good from the standpoint that we're just completing an access management study with Anoka County, which defines what the future use of that roadway is going to be. We've done, over the last several years, been developing a framework plan of the city of Coon Rapids, which really is looking at the types of land uses that would occur along the corridor. And it's also very critical to pay attention to this because we're asking for the extension of 9 tax increment districts, but they're starting now to expire legally. And once they expire, you don't have that opportunity to reestablish them. There were 2 actually that expired last year, and over the next 4 or 5 years, the rest of these districts will expire. And so the timing of of taking advantage of current law for the benefit of economic development along this boulevard is really an important point. The final point I'd like to make is really relating to the broader things that are going on in Coon Rapids. Coon Rapids Boulevard is very, very close to the North Star Commuter Rail. The current Riverdale Transit Station is very close to this corridor. And one of the priorities that the community has is that we'd like to develop some way to transport people conveniently from that Riverdale Transit Station. On the very other end of the corridor is the Foley Station, which has not been approved yet. But we certainly hope that it will be approved. And so there you'll have two anchors on the boulevard that would provide us an opportunity from a commuter employee standpoint to get people to and from the rail station and thereby maximize the use of North Star, making Coon Rapids an employment destination center. And it's so conveniently located that it would really make sense in terms of creating these 5,700 jobs where people can come in on the train, get off, take a little shuttle down the boulevard, go to a new place. And then from an employer standpoint, I know that one of the really critical issues is, how do I conveniently get my employees to work? And while none of this stuff happens overnight, the ingredients are there to return Coon Rapids Boulevard into a very vibrant economic corridor.
Mr. Fulton, are all these districts expiring at the same time?
No.
Or what are the expiration dates?
Mr. Chair and committee members, over the next 4 years, they all expire, but they expire. I can't tell you exactly which one expires on which date, but over the next 4 years, they all expire. This was an issue that this legislation was actually before you last year, and two of the districts actually expired in 2009.
Mr. Chairman, I also
Senator Foley.
Concerned about the development down there. We had a bonding request for Anoka Ramsey, I think in the neighborhood of $10 million, and that was vetoed, so we don't have that. And we've got all of this property in Coon Rapids that's it's kind of a dire need of that. There was a Red Owl, and there were a variety of other development in there that are all gone or are using other use. A Target yes. Corporation yeah. And so on was there, Rainbow.
And I just lamp over here.
We'd like your support for this venture.
Highway 610.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, if I could make just two more points, please. One would be that both the school district and the county support us in this endeavor. They, of course, would receive increment if these districts weren't extended, but they realize the viability of Coon Rapids Boulevard if we were allowed to reinvest in them through this means. And then secondly, just the importance of transit along this corridor. As Mr. Fulton stated, the North Star Rail runs within a mile or so of here, and Anoka Ramsey Community College, which enrollment is going crazy right now, but they actually have a nice little commuter rail transit service where they're running a bus to and from the rail station to their college. And I envision a number of businesses that could tie into that service if we were to enhance Coon Rapids Boulevard and get those 5,700 jobs back to Coon Rapids and back to Coon Rapids Boulevard.
So, Mr. Fulton, what's the linear distance of those districts along the boulevard?
The corridor is, Mr. Chair and committee members, the corridor is about 7.5 miles. And the major employers, Mercy Hospital is on the, what would be the westerly end. Mm-hmm. Northtown Mall is on the easterly end. Anoka Ramsey Community College is on the boulevard as well. You know, the way Coon Rapids developed, most of the parcels right now are pretty underutilized. They're small, just based on the history of how the community was formed. Over the course, though, of the last decade, because of the economic activities that have not happened, as well as the work on the city council, there are significant tracts of property that are ready to be redeveloped, either from the standpoint that the city already owns them and can manage that redevelopment, or significant tracts, as Senator Foley pointed out, where a former Red Owl site was, Subject to creating the right atmosphere for reinvestment, those parcels are prime for redevelopment. And those are significant tracts of acreage, 25, 30 acres. So, of course, across the entire linear length, our framework plan calls for actually four zoning districts. We call them ports, where the plans would call for intense development with moving traffic in between the ports. And those would align themselves around already current economic centers.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to mention, I see, you know, part of the aspiration here is to do some development and redevelopment in conjunction with and around the transit facility up there. And I have a bill, a new bill, a new approach to create some TIF in the vicinity, particularly around station areas. And we're going to have a hearing on that in this committee in about a week, I think. So I'd invite the Coon Rapids folks to take a look at that bill and see if that works for them, at least for the transit area. And let us know if that works for you and support that approach, too.
Senator Dibble, work on your argument, because I'm still having a hard time understanding why when we pour all these tens of millions of dollars into a rail corridor, then we have to somehow TIF the development. When I thought the whole idea of the transitway was that if we build it, then the development will come. And I'm still struggling. So work on the argument between now and when we hear the bill.
Well, we'll have a lot of examples, Mr. Chair, of, you know, how we've used the infrastructure investment in conjunction with some of the development tools to make sure that the kind of development that follows is the kind that is the highest and best and supports the transit facility. Likewise, the transit facility supports that kind of development. Like I said before, the investment is in the transportation piece itself.
They're with you?
We do TIF around roads and interchanges and things like that. It's no different in concept than that. You know, we still have some public side improvements that need to be done to support the development, and that the development pays for, that corresponds. It doesn't work by magic anywhere else. I don't know why it would work by magic here in Minnesota.
But for the TIF, Senator Dibble, is the development not going to happen?
Some kind of development will happen, but is it the kind of development that needs to happen to best support that public investment? You can do sprawl development anywhere. Is that what we want?
Senator Pogemiller.
I would just observe that if you put the lines in the correct place, maybe you don't have to spoil
it. Mr. Chair, that's absolutely not true. I mean, I know what he's trying to make, that even if we put the line where you want it, we're still going to need some of these development tools.
Mr. Fulton, you want to get in this?
We're not hearing this. Why not?
We're not hearing this bill till next week. But
Mr. Chair and committee members, I just want to point out a couple points. And this maybe is just to clarify a couple things. We're really asking that we extend the life of current TIF districts and not to create new TIF districts. These are districts that were established in the early 80s, and pooling is now allowed under current law for this purpose within our redevelopment area, which includes the corridor that we're talking about. So we're not talking about the creation of new tax increment districts. When you look at tax increment districts, as the chair points out, we do use the but-for provision, and because it's a requirement. And as economic development happens in the future, in our case it'll be redevelopment, and you judge each project on the merit and on the current law for the use of tax increment. In your packet, you see some material which kind of summarizes the access management study. I do want to point out that the plan that is being developed for the future of Coon Rapids Boulevard anticipates bus lanes and pedestrian ability to move people around, so that it really reflects current demands and the realities of how you need to deal with an important transportation corridor. But for the use of this special request, the county will be forced to go to the federal government to get funding for Coon Rapids Boulevard. And with that money would come sound walls. That goes directly counter to our ability to attract economic development. One of the realities in Coon Rapids is, if you look at our wealth per capita relative to the metro average, we're already at about 75%, and we're moving away from the metro average. Coon Rapids, as an aging community, in order to survive, especially under the new economy, has to pay attention to building economic base. The only alternative when you've got aging people and homes that were built in the right after World War II is to build your property tax base. The only area in Coon Rapids Boulevard where that has any real viable chance to occur is along Coon Rapids Boulevard. And so it's a this notion of creating an attractive investment environment is vitally important to the community. And the community has been spending the last decade trying to get their arms around how do we go about creating new economic opportunities.
Mr. Fulton, I see in the narrative what it says is Anoka County is not opposed to the request. Do they support the request?
Their approach today was in front of their intergovernmental committee actually yesterday, and there is a resolution that Councilmember Schulte has not seen. They are not opposed to the legislation. The school district is in support of this. One of the things, committee members and Mr. Chair, that the site that's probably most prime for redevelopment on the boulevard is the school district's welcome center. So in a district where the demographics are going south, as new families come in to see or to consider moving into the district, they use the boulevard to get to the welcome center. And the school district understands the impact that Coon Rapids Boulevard serves to the broader community. I mean, if you're not on State Highway 10, you're generally on Coon Rapids Boulevard. And the message that the symbol that that represents to the community is that Coon Rapids is an aging community and not heading the right direction.
So, Mr. Fulton, if I call Commissioner Earhart or Commissioner Lane and ask them how they feel, what will they tell me?
They would indicate that the county's philosophy, the county's policy, because it relates to tax increment, they never support tax increment. But in this particular case, the way that they have wordsmithed this is that they would not be opposed. In fact, their lobbyist may be in the audience. She indicated she might be able to be here this morning, and she could clarify that. But I would welcome you to call any of the commissioners to get their opinion.
So I should check with Kathy Tingelstead. Would you have a position for me?
She would be very able to clarify what the county's position is.
I'm always a little bit sensitive about extending TIF, and because I mean counties are that's the biggest piece. That $22 million, the biggest piece of that is tax revenue that would have gone to the county. So I think this committee has always been a little sensitive to that. So we probably would check with the county and see how they feel. Senator Scheid.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think it's difficult sometimes for people to get their head around the fact that second-ring suburbs are in redevelopment. Now, 12 years ago, I had reason to be using Coon Rapids Boulevard a lot. It takes you right up to the city of Anoka. And I live across the river from that map. Brooklyn Park is to the south and west of what you see on the map that in the packet. Both of our communities are engaged in significant redevelopment and have significant redevelopment needs. I've watched Coon Rapids Boulevard. I didn't really have reason to go farther east to get to Highway 10 very much, so I didn't know what was happening. Is it Riverdale? And I go there a lot now, and I take Coon Rapids Boulevard up to, I don't know if it's Round Lake or whatever, and get myself over to Riverdale. It's shocking to me what's happened. The development, the businesses that used to be there just aren't there. I mean, there used to be a Target there. There used to be some major car dealerships. Those are gone. Lots of empty, I think Frank's Nursery, I used to go to it. And it's been gone for quite a while, I think, now. But there's just a number of businesses that just aren't there anymore. I mean, it'd actually be worth driving because this is a second-ring suburb, and this is a very lovely part of town. I mean, the river is just, as you can see, Coon Rapids Boulevard is kind of running parallel there to the Mississippi River. There's very nice housing along the river, but then it's this, you know, the college, the hospital, all of those things. It's been pretty shocking to me, and I drive on that a couple times a week, I'd say, use it. The fact is they don't have the Foley station yet. We hope to get with North Star. They have the one up on the north end or the north and west end of this corridor. This needs help. And the sad thing is that these districts are expiring. It's kind of dovetailing with the wretched economy. And so you're not getting people to go in there now and just freely, even though I suppose it's a good time to buy, you know, and contracts are coming in low, but people don't have, you know, they need help to do that right now. And the money's not there. It's not being loaned and for the commercial development. So I think this is as worthy a proposal as I've seen. And I speak just only with some authority on it because it's my neighborhood, if you will. It's a community that I do business in and visit on a regular basis. So and we have lots of people from Brooklyn Park going up to Anoka Ramsey, for example. Lots of people at Mercy who work there and who use that hospital. It really needs this help. And I think, to tell you the truth, the school district has its own issues because, you know, they're in declining enrollment status. The county, I understand their you know, standing position to stay away from tax increment, but by saying they're not opposing it, I guess, okay, so I think that makes them neutral. But they have an interest as a county in seeing this development because right now the tax base can't be very good from those shut up businesses. I mean, literally empty, vacant. So I think they stand to gain much more than they stand to lose in the short term. And as I said before, the unfortunate thing is the timing of the expiration of these districts and also where the economy is and how slow it is to come back. So I hope we will consider extension here.
Mr. Fulton, the reconstruction of the highway, what period of time is that going to happen? if we were to do this, if I drove up there, what can I expect to see a year or two from now?
Mr. Chair and committee members, the access management study is just now being completed. Of course, that then would evolve into actually preparation of plans for the reconstruction of the boulevard. In all likelihood, the boulevard would be reconstructed in phases over the course of the next many years. But I would hope and expect that the first section, which would be located in one of our redevelopment ports, would certainly happen within the next several years. Thanks, Mr. Chair, and just wanted to mention to Senator Scheid, I was up in her district to see a movie recently. I was kind of surprised. I got a good deal on the movie because the theater clearly is trying to attract folks. Was it Brook something or another? It's near Brookdale.
Okay.
It's a tough area south of Earl Brown there.
Okay, sure.
No. Yeah. But what she's saying is absolutely true. A couple things. One is I would just encourage you to take a look at my bill, before you dismiss it out of hand. I think it might work for you, so take a look at it, read it, and let me know what you think about it. I wanted to ask about this final bullet point and a point that you raised, the alternative use of federal highway funds could only be used for sound walls or would require sound walls. I'm familiar with the use of, you know, mitigation dollars and what's called enhancement dollars that are part of our formula funds that come that don't mandate highway sound walls. Matter of fact, it's kind of a struggle sometimes in Minneapolis to get sound walls where we want them, and they can be used for, you know, other kinds of, you know, very creative uses, you know, that you find as enhancements. So, you know, I'm just curious to know more about how you come to this conclusion, or if you can provide more information about that.
Mr. Fulton, isn't there some way the county can access federal money here and get around the sound wall issue?
Mr. Chair, I
agree with Senator Dibble. It just seems like somehow there's got to be more flexibility in the funding than that.
We've had, Mr. Chair and committee members, we've had a couple of other projects that have occurred under the county's responsibility where there's been the requirement for sound wall additions. It actually is, and this is where I wish the county representative was here, it becomes a real barrier to accomplishing projects and leaving it open because of that requirement. Now, I don't personally know all of the relative details of federal highway funding, but in all of our meetings as we've gone through this access management study, one of the big hurdles has been we don't want to create any kind of a barrier, namely through sound walls, that's going to create a barrier for people's interest in investing. There's a residential section on the southeast side of the corridor. The city has $15 million invested, and we were prepared to go into a project several years ago, but that's when the housing market fell apart. The opportunity for us to create a mixed retail residential opportunities that, and with a focus mostly around seniors, is really limited if you're going to end up putting sound walls right in front of it. And it's my understanding that that is something that would need to be considered during this project, and based on the access management study, that sound walls would be part of this project.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I believe it has something to do with the delineation of a county state aid highway. Coon Rapids Boulevard is one of the major thoroughfares that the county considers a arterial and a state aid highway, and that may have something to do with the calculation. But it was the county engineers that came to us and said, if we do this, if we use federal money, the application will require sound walls. We do have a County Road 14, formerly State Highway 242, in the northern half of our city that recently was taken back by the county from the state, and during its access management study and subsequent redevelopment was required to put up sound walls. And they're in the process now of constructing those sound walls on County Road 14 or Main Street, which, you know, in certain places sound walls are fabulous and necessary. But on an economic corridor, it would seem counterproductive.
That's my reason for kind of questioning whether there's really a requirement to that. It just seems like there ought to be some. Is there any way around that? I've never served on transportation, but that seems a little odd.
I would have to know the particular circumstance, but I'm fairly certain that this requirement is far more flexible than this language would seem to indicate. For purposes of mitigation, enhancement, promotion of land, you know, appropriate land uses, and economic development. We've worked quite a bit in Minneapolis on this question.
Senator Foley?
Mr. Chairman, I do have the president of the Community College, so I'd like to afford him an opportunity to speak.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Pat Johns, president of Anoka-Ramsey Community College. And my point was exactly the point that Senator Scheid made. What she described is our neighborhood around the college. We have empty buildings, deteriorating neighborhood. I, in fact, live only about two or three blocks off of Coon Rapids Boulevard myself. I moved there in 1988 and have seen a dramatic change with the economy, the businesses along the boulevard. But it is our entryway to the college as well. We have 7,000 to 8,000 students who travel Coon Rapids Boulevard every day, and it is a deteriorating area that I think students observe, and we'd like to see that boost in that neighborhood just for our students. So just as an example, maybe an extreme example, we teach human sexuality. We'd rather see students attend that class and come to the college than we would purchase something at the local store that's not too far from the college. So it is a deteriorating area that we really would like to see us be successful in trying to develop and work with the city in doing that.
So, Mr. Fulton, how many parcels are in that quarter within these districts are we actually collecting increment on now?
Mr. Chair and committee members, I can't answer that question specifically. There are 9 districts. Some of which are directly on the corridor, some of those are within the redevelopment area, not directly on the corridor, but under current law, you're allowed to pool those increments. Annually, the remaining increments gather about $2 million a year.
Per year?
Per year.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I could make one more impassioned plea here. I run a business on the corridor, and my dad started the business back in 1958. I continue to run that business. In all likelihood, if we expand Coon Rapids Boulevard and redevelopment, I will lose my business. And that's a 52-year-old family-run business. So it's counterproductive for me to be here and say, I really want you to do this. But I know it's what's right for Coon Rapids. I know rebuilding Coon Rapids Boulevard and making it more business-friendly will likely cost me my business, but it will improve the community for decades to come. And having served on the Coon Rapids City Council for 10 years now, I've made it my mission to do just that, to make Coon Rapids a better place. We've worked on the Coon Rapids Boulevard Framework Study. I campaigned on it in the year 2000 that we needed to fix Coon Rapids Boulevard, not realizing that it would probably cost me my business. But nonetheless, we've worked on that plan now for 10 years, and we've invested a great deal of resources in the city of Coon Rapids and a great deal of time. And this is one major step that could help us reinvent the economic vitality of Coon Rapids Boulevard. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Schulte, I understand the importance, but the challenge this committee always wrestles with is you've captured the increment, it served the purpose, and the intent is now it's supposed to come on the tax base. I mean, the city of Duluth made this request of me last year. They had a very successful development down in Canal Park in Duluth, and very successful. And city of Duluth asked me, well, we'd like to continue to collect that increment off of what was a very, very successful project, served its purpose. And that's the challenge. And I understand the redevelopment issue, especially in these inner ring suburbs.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, what happened here, oh, I'm going to lose my voice, I'm sorry, is that along Highway 10, a lot of, I don't know how many, but a number of the businesses, and Target is one of them, and so you know that's a really big deal when that moves, and it moved. And it's just sort of symbolic of what happened to Coon Rapids Boulevard. So these 10, I don't know if it runs exactly parallel, but it might run pretty parallel. And there's quite a distance, you know, I mean, well, I don't know if it's a mile or two between them. You can tell I do drive it pretty regularly. And this was just, like, abandoned over here, and all the development is over on Highway 10, along Highway 10, Riverdale Crossing. And so we are talking about abandoned buildings, and it may have worked for a time, but once that new development came, and, of course, with the freeway, you know, well, with Highway 10 improved as it has been, and that development, it left this area. So, I mean, it's not quite like a small town having a freeway go by, but on the other hand, it kind of is like that. And so there were smaller businesses, were a number of strip malls kind of thing, but small, I think, successful businesses. And that boulevard just looks like it's struggling now. And he's talking about, I think, a XXX bookstore or something that's along there that he was mentioning. He's right, I've seen that too. I mean, that's a kind of symbolic of what's happened to this area. And so that's, I don't think that you had control over telling those businesses, the big box guys, the Home Depots, and you know, just everything that's over there. I don't know if there's Best Buy and Lowe's maybe and all kinds of restaurants. They all went over to the new area, and they all weren't over on Coon Rapids Boulevard. Some of them were, but then even the smaller businesses then left Coon Rapids Boulevard as well. So I think it's something that was out of the control of the city, and so they have these two corridors, and it is absolutely a main artery. I mean, that's one way you get yourself down to highway, to 610 or to 10, depending if you're going east or west. I don't know that it's certainly not as heavily trafficked as Highway 10, but I use it to avoid the traffic on 10. So I think that there are some things here that the increment may have worked as it was supposed to, but now I don't know what the increment was providing before. I assume it has to be less.
Mr. Fulton, if we extend this and the boulevard is reconstructed, how does that change the current development patterns? I mean, why is something going to change just because we reconstruct the boulevard. If Senator Scheid is right, and because of some external factors, development is now happening somewhere else, what would reconstruction of the boulevard, why would it then change that currently emerging development pattern?
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you. The access management study is working within the existing infrastructure, which primarily at peak times is over capacity in terms of the number of vehicles. As Senator Scheid indicates, we have a lot of traffic that's not as much now deviating from State Highway 10 and using the boulevard to get downtown. The access management study anticipates a plan that would accommodate future anticipated traffic levels. And so the design of the road going forward would maximize the opportunities for mass transit through primarily busing, and we certainly will consider opportunities for creating transit districts. The vehicle lane miles that we need to accommodate, there are some additional lane miles that in certain sections are actually going to be expanded. There are a whole variety of trails that are disconnected, all in very difficult shape. And so the reconstructed road will have different layouts for their intersections and capacity, and so it creates a different environment for someone to consider investing in. It also creates a new environment as a corridor for anyone looking at where they're going to be investing private dollars. If you're investing private dollars on a run-down road that doesn't handle traffic accurately or adequately, you're generally not going to be looking very, very strong at that particular location. I do want to also point out that I certainly appreciate the position on the extension of tax increment districts. This issue was in front of you last year, and you extended that message to us fairly clearly. This is not Canal Park. The issues that are confronted with the city of Coon Rapids and the dilapidated state, as we struggle to try to figure out how we're going to continue to deliver public services, and I'm talking not only about the city, but the school district and the county, all jurisdictions are, they may wordsmith it as to being not opposed to it, but they recognize what we're trying to do from a vibrancy in the community and are in support of what we're attempting to do, because funding is becoming more and more difficult to achieve. It certainly takes much, much longer. And communities like Coon Rapids that really have a need to create greater property tax base, this provides us that opportunity to do it. From an economic standpoint, Mr. Chair and committee members, I do have a representative from Mercy Hospital, who is the major employer not only in the community but the most significant medical employer on the boulevard. And if you would
Mr. Fulton, we've got a number of other bills, so I think we kind of need to move on. But I think we understand the issue. Senator Scoy moves an oral amendment on line 1.9. After the word districts, delete the words through the period up, and then continue the sentence. And members, that's just a technical amendment to word of some extra words in there. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Foley, thank you. Chair leads over to Senate File 2829 for possible inclusion.
What kind of business is he have? Schulte?
Currently. Can't be much there. That's why I asked about one of the persons.
Senator Mwah?
He's got the sweetest smile.
Mm-hmm.
I have people that say he doesn't smile.
He's on the city council.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for giving me the opportunity to present to you Senate File 2467. Mr. Chair, members, we have already had an opportunity to look at Senate File 2467, I think, last session, and we're coming back to ask, I believe was included in the bill last year, and we, in the Senate bill last year. And so we're asking for the committee to help us with this. It has to do with a tax increment financing district in St. Paul along the University, Snelly University Avenue area. And we're just asking for some exemptions from the expenditures to be able to be spent on other city projects all along University Avenue. And Mr. Todd Hurley from the city, who is the city treasurer, is here to speak to the bill as well as to answer questions on the project.
Thank you, Senator Mao. Senator Bach, members of the commission, my name is Todd Hurley. I'm the treasurer for the city of St. Paul. Last year, the city of St. Paul brought a bill before this committee that would have expanded the use of the city of St. Paul's tax increments, going as far as extending the terms of multiple districts on our TIF districts in St. Paul. This committee did have many concerns with that bill, so this year we are back. We heard what this committee said, and we're back actually to reduce the scope of our request this year. The bill before you pertains to the city's redevelopment TIF district at Snelling and University. This district was certified, was created in 1990 and certified by Ramsey County in 1992. At that time, the city was not aware of the additional costs that would be associated with the Central Corridor project. This is a district that is a 25-year district, and it is currently scheduled to decertify in 2016, and we're not looking to extend that date this year. This bill, if adopted, would actually do three things in assisting the city in helping us pay for our required the things that we are looking to pay for on Central Corridor. First, it would relieve us from the 5-year rule for the Snelling U TIF district. Second, it would allow the city to use the district, use the tax increment from that district in the project area, which is Central Corridor. And third, it would give us exemption from the 90% rule, which would allow the city to spend increments on public infrastructure within the project area, which is Central Corridor. If there's any questions on this bill, I can answer them. I also have with me is Nancy Holmans from the City of St. Paul, who is the project manager on Central Corridor.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Mao, how much money are we talking about?
What this would do is it's about approximately $6 million.
Annually?
Nope, total. This would be total through it's what would be available for us to use outside of the debt service that we currently have on the TIF district at Snelling U.
It's $6 million over the life of the district?
Over the life of the district.
Currently.
Right.
Mr. Chair, I believe there's a small oral amendment that's technical in nature that we should.
Senator Mao, why don't you offer it on line 1.7?
On line 1.7, strike 4, comma, paragraph, parent J, and just insert 4J.
On the Mao oral amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogemiller.
Chairman, there's something real simple I'm missing here. Where would the $6 million go if you didn't do this?
Chair Bach, Senator Pogemiller, the money would be available to use for the public expenditures within the Central Corridor project area.
If this doesn't pass, what happens to the $6 million?
Correct. That's the question.
Oh, the question. It's right now, without the passing of this, waiving the 5-year rule, in 2016, if we cannot use the money for what we originally anticipated using the money in 1990 and 1992, the money would actually be available at the end of 2016 to return back to Ramsey County, which would then be spread amongst the taxing jurisdictions in St. Paul. So the school district, Ramsey County, and the city of St. Paul.
So, Mr. Hurley, it's generated more increment than you can spend?
Under the current rules. There was a technical thing that happened in pre-90 TIF districts was this 5-year rule. If we've got other work that we have to do in the district, including things more expenditures at Midway Marketplace, in addition, and there's a piece of land on Snelling and University there, the bus barn site. So if our attorneys say that we can use the money, we would use it there. But where we're at right now, it doesn't appear that we can actually use it for those projects unless we.
Senator Pogemiller.
So out of the $6 million, how much is county, how much is city, and how much is school district?
Typically, the rule of thumb we use is about 40% would be Ramsey County, and then 30% and 30% would be the city and the school district.
Okay.
Senator Pogemiller.
So if we don't pass this,
I presume Ramsey County and St. Paul would use the money the way you want to use it, not the school district. Ramsey County is all in on the Central Corridor.
As of Tuesday, Ramsey County did take a vote and does support this legislation for us to use with this legislation, the $6 million that would be available for us to use. Ramsey County did vote on Tuesday to support this legislation and allow us to use this money in the Central Corridor.
That's no surprise because they're the ones driving the Central Corridor decision.
Right.
So the only how's the school district feel? I bet you they'd like to have their money.
The school district did support this also.
Really?
Yes.
Have they voted that way?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogue-Miller, they voted and supported this legislation. I'm sorry. My name is Nancy Holmans. I'm with Mayor Chris Coleman's office. Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogue-Miller, they have supported this legislation in the past, and they supported the city's legislative agenda on which this is a part of it. I think the assumption that we're all making is that while there may be a one-time windfall if this district is decertified, the long-term growth and economic development and the long-term growth in tax base would be better served by investing this money in creating a better platform for economic development at the Snelling and University intersection.
So Mr. Hurley, why wouldn't we just give you some authority to expend the money in the district rather than do also the pooling change?
Senator Bach, we will have $6 million within the district to spend on this. The intention was to make sure that we had the flexibility to use it throughout the Central Corridor project. So we could use the money in the Snelling University District on the corridor, but we're looking for the flexibility to use it throughout the entire project area.
I understand that. Any other questions? Senator Dibble?
Well, Mr. Chair, it just again goes to my earlier point that there is some public infrastructure that we need to find some resources to pay for that aren't paid for by the projects themselves. So in this case, they're needing, and we've read in the paper, community concerns and you know, in terms of mitigation, as well as in terms of public infrastructure to support the redevelopment potential. Absent this, it just doesn't happen.
But Senator Dibble, if there are needs in the district that they currently can't expend the money for, and we tweaked the use of the money within the district, why wouldn't we want it spent in the district that the district was created to serve? Why would we take the money out of it when there may be $6 million of needs in the district that they just can't currently use the money for? That's kind of my thought, I think.
Well, I'll let St. Paul respond, but, you know, I think the point is, you know, there's certainly some, I think they will be spending some of these proceeds around that node, but they also, you know, these are linear. I mean, it's similar to the Coon Rapids proposal. I mean, they're building a road. Development's not going to happen by magic. They're looking for some increment tools to assist with the development. This is similar. You know, they've got a 7-mile stretch they're talking about. Got an existing district, they want a little flexibility to spread it a little bit beyond in a more linear fashion.
So, Mr. Fulton, Mr. Hurley, what's going to happen to the $6 million of work that could be done in the district if this money's moved out?
Senator Bach, the issue that we're having here is the 5-year rule in 1992. We did not contemplate the Central Corridor when we set up this district. Getting the waiver on the 5-year rule, we have a situation where we never contemplated the work that we need to do in that area as related to Central Corridor. It will be difficult without this waiver to even do additional work within that district without waiver of the 5-year rule. because what we're looking at right now is not things we were thinking about back in 1990.
Senator Pogelner.
What I'm struggling with, though, is if the city and the county and apparently the school district are committed to doing this, why do we have to change the law? The money goes back to them.
This part's
they just appropriate it.
That is, okay.
Because they're committed to doing it.
What is two?
Senator Pogelner, the money wouldn't go back to the taxing jurisdictions until we do decertify the district, which we can't do because of debt service on existing bonds until 2016, and the need to do the project for Central Corridor is today.
Yes.
Any other questions, members? Senator Mwah, anything further?
Nothing further, Mr. Chair.
Charlie's over Senate File 2467 as amended for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Rest? Senator Rest, Senate File 2255.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 2255 is also a tax increment proposal, and what it allows is the existing pooling authority that is available for housing districts to also allow it for market rate housing throughout the city. And I don't think it's more complicated than that. You've seen the bill before, actually, or a version of it last year. And I have a couple of testifiers who want to speak about why this would be a useful tool in today's housing market.
Ms. O'Rourke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jennifer O'Rourke. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. We're the statewide association representing cities at the Capitol. The League is supportive of this bill that you have before you today and have worked on it the last couple of years that the idea has been before you. It's not a new idea. A number of cities have used this and been authorized in statutes since about the mid-90s, I believe. And some of those are covered in the legislation before you. Cities already have the ability to pool for affordable housing, as you all know. We feel this is an appropriate expansion for some market rate housing with the foreclosure crisis the way it is. I would like to add for the record that there's a group called the Minnesota Foreclosures Partners Council that has met off and on over the last couple of years, and this has been one of the tools they've identified of something in current statute that could be used for a few years to provide cities some leeway to deal with real problematic neighborhoods and foreclosed properties.
Mr. Chairman, I would point out, too, that I did not in my opening remark is that the authority for market rate housing would sunset in 2015, assuming that the housing foreclosure crisis will be well over by that time, and this tool would not be one that would be needed or used.
Chairman Bach, committee members, Paul Bolin with the City of Fridley Housing Redevelopment Authority. Here today in support of the provisions in this bill. Fridley, like a number of other communities, has been hard hit by this foreclosure crisis, and there really aren't any tools out there to help us address this problem. Fridley was one of the original six cities that had the authority that's given in sections 2 and 3 of the bill in front of you. That authority expired in 2004. But in the 10 years that Fridley was able to use that authority for scattered site acquisitions, we did acquire and demolish 21 dilapidated properties, and increased our taxable market value by $3 million through building new homes on those 21 dilapidated sites. Just in the past 2 years, Fridley's had 4% of our housing stock has been foreclosed on. Last year, almost 50% of the home sales in Fridley were foreclosures. Where this impacts the city and the city's budget is that we've got a number of these properties that now the banks that are holding them, the private market won't even purchase a number of these homes. And recently now, a lot of the banks that have taken the properties back are not paying property taxes on them. They're not maintaining the homes. So the city ends up cutting the grass and assessing that cost back against these properties. But it's 5 to 7 years down the road, likely, before we have any of that money returned to us. These tools that are in front of you today would allow us to go out and purchase some of the worst properties that are out there, the ones that the banks don't even want, the ones that the private market won't take off of their hands. I guess with that, I'll end my remarks, but I certainly appreciate consideration of the provisions that are in front of you.
Chair Bach, members of the committee, my name is Jim Urchell. I work for Dayton's Bluff Neighborhood Housing Services, which is a nonprofit housing organization that works on the east side of St. Paul. For reference, Chair Bach, we provide similar services as the Arrowhead Economic Opportunity Agency does up in your area. Our neighborhood where I work is the second hardest hit zip code in the state of Minnesota for foreclosures. The only other zip code that would be harder hit than ours would be the zip code of 55411 in North Minneapolis. We've had, since 2005 in the city of St. Paul, we've had almost 8,000 foreclosures. The east side of St. Paul, where I work, has about 20,000 homes, and we've had probably half of those foreclosures have been in our part of the city. So we've had approximately 18% of our housing has been foreclosed. And like Fridley, we have different segments of the neighborhoods. There's areas where the marketplace is working fine. There's other areas where it's in some blocks it needs some intervention by government and by nonprofit organizations, and then the areas actually you wouldn't even have to drive there from here. You could walk here. The areas that are close here to the Capitol, say within a 2 mile radius of the Capitol, have been especially hard hit, and that's the areas that need major intervention. I believe the last time that St. Paul had this district, they didn't use it because the marketplace was started working and it wasn't necessary. But we certainly need it this time around. In the area where I work, the values of the housing have declined by about 50%. So the east side of St. Paul's lost $1 billion in real estate value, so the impact on all three of the taxing jurisdictions has already been significant. Some areas will recover on their own, but the areas that we're working in will definitely need some governmental assistance to turn them around.
Senator Rest, lines 4.23 into 4.25. What's the argument that the city shouldn't expend some of their own resources on this?
Mr. Chairman, that is an error in the drafting, and I would move to reinsert the stricken language.
Senator Rest moves to reinstate the stricken language on line 4.23 to 4.25. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Contrary, no. The motion prevails. I like it better now. Anybody? Committee members, any other questions? Senator Russ, thank you. Chair lays over Senate File 2255 for possible inclusion, as amended. Senator Saltzman.
Oh, great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am here today with Senate File 2970, which involves the village of Landfall. And Landfall is a community of 800 residents in my district. It has 300 manufactured homes and two motorcycle dealerships. And this involves a TIF agreement that was put together a number of years ago. And when it was put together, it was flawed. And perhaps there could have been an attempt to come earlier to fix this, but at this time we do have this bill before you because they are sort of in some dire straits in that if we're not able to to change this through special legislation, the residents of Landfall, which are lower income residents, will be responsible for an $800,000 bill instead of using on the TIF agreement. And so Mr. Schoberg is here, who is the city attorney. I want to recognize that his two children are here today and are watching Democracy in Action. They've enjoyed the tax committee, I can tell. You've had a very stimulating conversation today, but this is how it works. I just want to thank them for being here and watching their dad in action today. So, Mr. Schoberg.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I represent a fairly unique community in Washington County. The city of Landfall Village consists of approximately 800 residents, and as Senator Salzman indicated, we have basically two businesses. That one business in and of itself was essentially created with the tax increment dollars that we're requesting an amendment on the pooling rule. To give you a little bit of background as to what happened, I was not the city attorney at the time. This was done by a previous city attorney who advised the city that they would not be violating the pooling regulations, and the transaction went forward. This was in 2001. In 2001, there was $550,000 expenditure for the redevelopment of the Harley-Davidson dealership, which I'm sure many of you, as you travel on Highway 94 going east, when you get to Century Avenue, if you take the Century Avenue exit and go north, you'll hit Hudson Boulevard. When you drive down Hudson Boulevard, it's strange, but essentially the city of Landfall is the Harley-Davidson dealership, the Indian Motorcycle dealership, and the 300 homes in the mobile home park. I think Senator Scheid earlier had talked about Frank's Nursery, and I think if you recall, many, many years ago, there was a Frank's Nursery in that location. It became blighted. The city then decided that they needed to redevelop the property, and Harley-Davidson came forward with the project. That's where this started. What happened afterwards is in 2006, after I became the city attorney, I was notified in September that the TIF had expired, which was actually kind of strange because I've been doing this for 20 years, and as you're aware, normally when a tax increment financing is put together, it's paid over a certain period of time, and at the end of it, it's completed. It doesn't expire. So as a result of that, we started looking at the situation and determined that there was a number of things that were done improperly in this process. We can fix most of them. The one that we can't fix is the pooling violation. The only way it can be fixed is by special legislation. During this process, the bank decided that they were going to commence action against the city with respect to the tax increment financing. As you probably read in the newspaper, a judgment was entered against the city for $653,000 in December. Now, what that means is, as you're aware, the city is low income. And if you took a look at the actual tax revenue from the city of Landfall is generally from the tax fiscal disparity. There's no large pool of money to be able to recover these types of dollars. That's the reason that we have this bill in front of you, because it's the only way to fix this problem. The pooling violation occurred because we essentially had old money and new money that was added, and based on the advice of the city attorney at that point in time, the city council thought that they were acting appropriately. The Housing and Redevelopment Authority Board at the City of Landfall thought that they were acting pursuant to the law. They were not. As a result, this bill is pending before you because we need to correct this. The residents in the City of Landfall cannot afford the $653,000 judgment. So the only way to fix this is with the special legislation. And I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have with respect to this, but essentially that's why we're here.
Questions, members?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, have we made retroactive corrections for other
council
communities or entities?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scheid, we have certainly done bills like this numerous times that created additional windows for that five-year period, extended that five-year period for a number of years. That's been pretty common in recent years.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, I also did some research on that issue, and I have actually a packet here going from 1996 through 2007. I'd be happy to leave that with you. It was one of the issues that we had discussed. I wanted to make sure that this was something that we weren't asking out of the ordinary.
So, Mr. Schuberg, that's very good. Can you tell us how many times we've done something like this?
Well, in looking at this, it looks to me that there's over 30 instances where it's happened from 1996 to the present. So, and it's, I think in defense of how this happens, sometimes it's not being able to foresee how these things are going to develop, and so a number of these bills that you've approved in the past have been that way. I am not sure that they are based on this situation where a mistake was made at that early point, but it's the same circumstances.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman and sir, how many tax increment districts does Landfall have?
One.
This is the only one?
The only one.
Probably not going to do it again either, huh?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I don't think that I would have recommended that they do it this way to begin with. My experience in the last 20 years is I always bring in bond counsel when issues like this come about, and that would have been the process and the procedure that we utilized at that point in time. That wasn't done in this case. It was done by the city attorney. It's not something that I would recommend, and it probably wouldn't be something that I would recommend going forward.
Mr. Schuberg, how many parcels are in the district?
There are two parcels in the district.
One met the five-year rule and one did not?
Correct.
Any other questions, members?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Scoy.
Just going to comment to Senator Saltzman on the new math that the Education Committee must be working on, that 5 = 8 now.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, I did not hear that.
Any other questions, members? Charlie is over Senate File 2970 for possible inclusion. Senator Saltzman, Senator Schuberg, thank you for your good
thank
work
you
and
very
thank
much.
You for your research. Seriously.
Yes.
Legislative precedence is very important here, and thank you for recognizing how we value that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Senator Cohen. Member Senator Cohen is in his own committee as we speak, and what we have in front of us today is Senate File 3223, which is Senator Cohen's supplemental budget cut bill. I believe there are about $208 million in cuts to the previous budget that the state is working under. Does that sound like the right number, Senator Folkemiller? So there's about $208 million in cuts in here that have worked through the finance divisions and through the finance committee. They've been sent here so that the tax committee can participate in our share of the budget reduction to get the state budget back into balance. So members, what we're handing out The A3 amendment is something that I've been working on to try and meet the Senate's tax target of $105 million in reductions of aids and credits to our cities, counties, and townships. And there is, in addition to the cut in FY11, there's a cut in this amendment in FY12 and 13 also, which will help, if this is passed into law, bring down the deficit in the next biennium. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, before we get into a discussion of that, just occurred to me in the comment that you made to the former testifier and the research that he had done that it might be worthwhile for the tax committee over the interim to look at exceptions that have been made to general law statutes regarding TIF. And if 30 times we have made an exception, for example, for the five-year rule, maybe we ought to think about look at the reasons why. I mean, a mistake is one thing, but look at the reasons why some of those general law provisions that we have given exception to over and over again, and maybe we ought to change them.
Senator Rest, would you like to work on that?
Yeah,
I think that would be very valuable to the committee. I think because, especially in these economic times, I expect that next year we're also going to see a number of requests to depart from the provisions of the current law.
I think that we're doing it very, very cautiously, obviously, but looking at the exceptions that have been made, why, and seeing if that justifies at least a consideration of a new approach. But please do not set – I'll just – work with some people. Don't set up a task force. Don't put it in the tax bill. Just, I volunteer to work on it.
Okay? I get it.
Okay, thank you.
Last year you volunteered to work on the issue of that scattered site housing replacement districts, I think.
Yeah, that was in the bill you just saw.
Right, yeah. Right. So thank you. Thank you for your willingness to do that. I think, getting our arms around a little bit about kind of what kind of precedent there is, I think, is important for us to know.
Thank you very much for letting me say that.
Members, you have the language of the A3. Senator Skoy moves the A3, and you have runs of what the impacts of the cuts are by city and county. Yep, by city and county. And then you have the spreadsheet of Senator Cohen's articles from his finance divisions in their cuts. What should we do? Mr. Paulson, you want to walk through kind of what we have in here? Paulson, why don't you tell us what we're doing in the A3 and the way we're changing aids and credits to cities, counties, and towns.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Jack Paulson from Senate Council on Research. It'd be good to look at this spreadsheet first that says comparison of 2010 state aid and credit reductions. If you look at that, the first set of columns on the left is the current 2010 governor's allotment that was executed in late January, early February. It was $199.6 million. The governor has proposed legislatively an additional $250 million in reductions in state aids and credits. That's the center set of columns. And then on the far right, it shows Senate File 3223. That total, as Senator Bach mentioned, in $105.9 million, split evenly between counties and cities. And mechanically, the way it works is that for the unallotments or the legislative reductions, what you do is you take a percentage of each local government's levy plus aid, so a uniform percentage to all units, local government levy plus aid, and then apply that to their LGA or county program aid and their market value credit. One difference from what the governor proposed is that the cuts were taken first from local government aid and county program aid. Under Senate File 3223, what we're doing is taking first from market value credit, then from local government aid or county program aid if there's not enough. So you can see that for counties, market value credit is reduced $53.3 million. One county doesn't have enough, and so it's a $49,000 reduction of their county program aid. Similarly for cities, $44.8 and $7.8 of local government aid. So that's for 2010. And you can see the remaining aid payments down below. If there are no questions on that, we can move to the sheet that says comparison of 2011 and 2012 state aid and credit reductions. Again, we show the governor's proposal on the far left, and the governor's proposing a reduction of $449.4 million in aid. Excuse me. Aid and market value credit in 2011, which is fiscal 12. The Senate File 3223 is bringing forward the $106 million. So that's the difference between the two. When we get to the out years, we're no longer doing a levy plus aid type of reduction. There, we're actually cutting the appropriation. It's a permanent cut going forward in the appropriations for local government aid and county program aid. In addition, like what the governor recommended, we're also carrying forward for cities $25.5 million in market value credit reductions, for townships $4.7 million in market value credit reductions. If you add up the local government aid and market value credit reductions for cities, it's approximately equal to the reduction for counties under the Senate proposal, similarly for 2012 fiscal 13. And on the bottom row of columns, it shows the remaining aid after those reductions are made.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Paulson, thank you for the work on this. Can you just remind us of what the 2008 and 2009 totals were so we can compare the trend?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, I'll have to look for that. I'm not sure I have it right here. Maybe our fiscal analyst can help with that. Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, the 2008 unallotments, counties were unallotted $44 million, cities $66 million, total of $110 million. That was executed in December of 2008. The 2009 unallotments, counties were unallotted $33 million, cities $64 million, townships $2.5 million for a total of $99.7 million.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, then what were the totals of that were actually paid after the reductions for 2008 and 2009? We have numbers for
what our 2010 total would be and what our 2011 and 12 would be. And I'm wondering if you have that same total for what we actually paid out in 2008 and 2009 after the reductions.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, sorry, the numbers are on this sheet. They're not calculated. Before an allotment, in 2008, the cities were $484.1 million. They were unallotted $66 million. So that difference is what the net paid to cities would have been. County program aid was $205 million, and they were unallotted $44 million. So approximately $160 million remaining for county program aid. For 2009, city LGA total distribution would have been $526 million. The unallotment was 64.2. And for county program aid, it was $227.9 million. The unallotment was 33. Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, for some cities, we can't exactly take the difference because for some cities, if they don't have any local government aid, it would have extended to market value credit instead. So we'll try to get you that information as soon as we can.
Thank you, Mr. Paulson.
Mr. Chair, if no further questions on that, I'll just point out these county and city runs that you mentioned. Just briefly, proposed county market value credit and county program aid reductions. On the far left column, it shows the levy plus aid base. The percent that's being applied to levy plus aid is 1.85803%. Gets to be a long fraction to kind of hit the dollar target. The current market value credit, what we're proposing to cut, which is $53,322,453. Counties, of course, were unallotted in 2010, so the next column is their remaining after the 2010 unallotment. There's only one county that doesn't have a market value credit. It's Cook County. And so the total proposed cut for the this Senate file is $53.4 million. The city run is... has the same layout for cities. It's 3.4287% of levy plus aid. The city market value credit cut, there were unallotments, so that's down to $56.4 million. The Senate proposal cuts 44.7. LGA after unallotment, there's about $8 million that the there's cities where they don't have enough market value credit, and we end up cutting local government aid, and the total then is $52.5 million. I should point out on the city runs, Mr. Chair, in some cases it shows zero for a number of cities for the cut, and that occurs in places where a city has little, if any, market value credit to begin with, and so their market value credit was eliminated in the governor's first unallotment, and so there's nothing more to take, and so they end up with a zero under this.
Senator Ortman, the thought behind this really kind of models, or mirrors is maybe the better word, the governor's approach of reducing aids and credits based on levy plus aid rather than based on tax capacity, so it's very similar to what the governor proposed. The number is significantly less because it's $105 million rather than $250 million that the governor had proposed to take. But the difference in the approach is the governor's approach was to take local government aid to cities to the extent they had it and then go to the market value credit. And I really felt that that didn't spread the burden around the state like I felt was more appropriate. So this approach was to take market value credit first, which spread the aid cuts to more cities. And I would argue, spreads the burden around the state more of paying for the tax committee's portion of the budget reductions. And some cities, like Mr. Paulson said, aren't impacted at all. In the first page, you can see on, I think it's Ham Lake, they don't see a reduction. They never got a lot of market value credit to start with, and through the governor's unallotments, they lost what they did have. So they're not impacted by this bill. There are some other cities like that. But generally, this asks all cities in the state to participate in the cuts in this budget bill. Any thoughts, members? This is painful. You know, I think we all understand in this committee that there are going to be property tax ramifications because of what we're doing here today. And we are going to see property taxes go up as a result of this. There is one additional year on the levy limits. There is a provision in here that allows cities to levy back the lost aid like we have had under current law. But cities actually showed a great deal of restraint, I thought, in trying to absorb the levy cuts most, or the aid cuts most cities did, and did not levy back kind of the historical pattern of levying back two-thirds of aid cuts. And I think they recognized the challenges in their community and have shown a great deal of restraint. But I don't know how many times we expect them to do that. There is a point where efficiencies become very hard to find, and I do think going forward we're going to see greater property tax increases as the state continuing to reduce aid to our local governments. And I just think we all just need to recognize that we're pushing more and more the burden onto the property tax when we make reductions in state aids and credits like this. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How much, Mr. Paulson, how much market value credit is left for this year after the proposed cuts that we're considering? Is that number?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, if you look at the, for the cities, after the governor's 2010 allotment, the third column in, there's $56.4 million market value credit remaining. They started at about approximately 85, I believe.
Okay. I hadn't looked at that. Thank you.
Okay.
So the answer is not a lot.
Mr. Chair, after if the Senate action becomes law, there won't be a lot. Yeah.
There'd be about $12
million
left of market value credit statewide. Senator Rubin, what do you think of the approach?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it makes sense to start with the same methodology that the governor is using. I did want to know, though, last year we heard some testimony from a couple of small cities about the terrible impact when LGA is, 30% of their budget. The cities that are 1,000 and under in terms of population, and we exempted them last year. The governor, I asked Commissioner Innes if they were exempt in the governor's plan this year. He said no. And I'm wondering if the Senate's provision has exempted those small cities. Looks like it's not. But.
Senator Ortman, no, we did not. This very much mirrors what the governor's approach. And those small cities and small counties are going to see aid and credit reductions, just like they would have under the governor, except rather than $250 million in cuts, we're talking about a little over 105. But I wanted to consider that, but we just couldn't make this work. We couldn't find enough cuts and allow such a large number of cities to be exempted. And I did feel like at some point everybody has to participate in this. So we really are trying to ask all cities in the state to participate and help balance the state budget. And I'll say it again, there are going to be property tax impacts as a result of us doing this. Senator Ortman.
Well, Mr. Chair, I do think that challenges the premise of LGA. I'm saying it challenges. I don't necessarily disagree with the approach here. Just I think the concept is that
we're providing for essential services as needed and making sure that communities across the state all have a standard level. And when LGA does comprise that much of their budget, it has a bigger impact, obviously. And so I'm not sure that you can account for that any differently with a different formula. It's just something we all should be aware of when we work on LGA.
Well, Sarman, that was my thought relative to taking market value credit first, because market value credit is not based on need. It's just a credit that's paid out, has no relationship to whether a community needs the aid or not. It just has a relationship to kind of what values there are on their housing stock, the values of their homes are. So this, I think, to the extent we can, tries to preserve the need-based portion of the aids and credits. Senator Pogemiller.
I move A3 be adopted.
Senator Pogemiller moves to A3. Is there a second one? Is that part of it?
It's the second one. Senator Sequoia.
I'll do it next.
Senator Pogemiller, we have the A3 in front of us. Senator Pogemiller, we have an amendment to the amendment.
Yes. Oh, it is an amendment to the amendment. I thought it was to Senator Cohen's bill. Mr. Chair, I have an amendment, A4 amendment, or A4 amendment, yes.
So is Houston? Where's the amendment?
And, Mr. Chair, while that's being passed out, this is two date changes, members. Section 1 is the Senator Phoebe bill that we had in front of committee to extend the date for the Rural Preserve sign-up. This is a bill that you've heard and moved on, and it's reasonable. The other one is the other date change in Section 2 is to extend the LGA study group out a couple years. It's awful hard to work on the redoing the formula when we're cutting the amount of money in the program.
Questions, members, on the A4? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. A4 is adopted. Members, on the A3 amendment, you'll notice at the very start of it, there is a deletion of two sections in Senator Cohen's bill, sections 10 and 11. What those are, it's an agreement that was worked out between myself and Senator Cohen. There was about $870 in cuts to the payment in lieu of taxes provision in the environment section of the bill. This takes those cuts out, and it raises the tax target by that amount taken out of county programming. And the rationale is, if we're going to spread this pain around the state, the idea of cutting the payment in lieu of tax formula impacts a small number of counties that happen to have that public land in them. And it kind of seems like we're nicking them twice. When we cut county program aid from them, then in some group of counties, we cut their payment in lieu of tax also. So this deletes, I just want to be clear, this deletes those provisions. Senator Cohen understands that we're going to pay for that in this bill, and the amendment does that. And then there's one other small provision in this bill. It was Senator Erickson Rope's provision for the small community of Houston. They were like $1,000. Well, Mr. Paulson, why don't you explain it? It's a census issue.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Senator Erickson Rope's had her bill, I believe it was in Property Tax Division. The city of Houston had a population of 1,003 in 2007, and because the 2007 population was used for the governor's unallotments, they were hit with the unallotments in 2008 and 9, 10. But their population, according to the demographer, dropped to 989 in 2008. And so they were making the argument that the unallotment should not have applied to them because their population was lower than the threshold.
So this would increase their local government aid in in which year?
Mr. Chairman, what we've done in this bill is to provide an aid-based adjustment for Houston. That's not what was in Senator Erickson Rope's bill. In that, they were asking for an actual appropriation and payment. In this case, what we did is for the 2011 aid, we gave them an aid-based adjustment of $107,000 to cover the unallotments, and that will be paid with the 2011 LGA.
One time?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, there are no other cities, or are there other lines of demarcation where anybody would have fallen
that,
off?
That's the only one that I think we're aware of. Mr. Willett, any other cities that we're aware of? Any other questions, members? Senator Ortman, do we have a bipartisan vote on this, or what are we doing here? This is a cut bill, and, you know, a lot of people talk about cutting government, and I just, you know, I've tried to avoid roll calls in this committee. I don't find them very productive, but I'd like to know if we have bipartisan support for moving this cut bill out. Senator Ortman?
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could roll you back just a minute, I did have another question about this. The A3 amendment was prepared at 4:07 p.m. yesterday, and I'm wondering, are we going to take any testimony on the proposal before we vote?
We could. Who would you like to testify, Senator? Does he have somebody in mind?
Mr. Chair, I think it should be open to the public to come and testify if they'd like, and I don't know if there's someone here that would like to testify. I think we should ask.
I think most of the people in the audience are breathing a bit of a sigh of relief, I would guess. But would anybody in the audience like to testify in the A3 amendment?
Where's Colin?
The governor's proposal, I believe, proposed about $125 million. He split the cuts equally between the county and the cities, and we're trying to accomplish that same thing. Mr. Carlson, Mr. Matthews?
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Keith Carlson with the Minnesota Intercounty Association, and I do want to acknowledge the Senate, the committee's efforts to moderate the cuts on all levels of local government. But I frankly must express my disappointment in the level of cuts here on the so-called 50-50 without taking into account the cuts that the counties are suffering in other committees. On the budgets that have been adopted to date in the environment and the public safety divisions, we've suffered over $8 million of cuts in this biennium, and we'll be suffering nearly $11 million of cuts in the next biennium. We have not seen the Health and Human Services bill yet. We don't know exactly what your targets are, but if we follow what has been published for the House at another $150 million worth of cuts, we will be taking some portion of that. The GAMC bill that's up on the floor today will reduce our adult mental health grants by over $7 million. We're taking additional reductions in the chemical dependency area and also in HIV grants. So, frankly, we're disappointed that there seems to be a failure to acknowledge the reductions that we're suffering in other committees. The House at least seemed to recognize that and moderated our cuts in the out years. So we do have some concerns, and I will voice an additional concern with regards to the 2011 amounts, whether or not this is really going to be actually come through even at the lower level. If you put these amounts out here, these are certified to us, we base our budgets on that, we base our levies on that, and you come back in 2011 and you face an additional budget problem and you cut us retroactively, you're just adding to the pain that we're suffering. We'd much prefer that you adapt realistic numbers that can be sustained. With that, I'll conclude.
Mr. Chair, Joe Matthews, Association of Minnesota Counties. I'll agree with all the comments from Mr. Carlson. I also want to thank you for addressing the PILT issue, which is a concern, and recognizing that is another way that some of our folks were being kind of double hit. And again, just ask members of this committee and the legislature to remember that for counties, we do take our lumps in a number of committees, not just this one. And again, appreciate your effort on this area. Thank you.
Mr. Matthews, Mr. Carlson, we're trying to do our best in this committee to recognize that things we do here impact property taxes at the local level. I think we painfully understand that, how the relationship between the state and our local governments, especially counties, has been very strained in recent years. And I mean, I don't know what more to say than that. You know, we've got a very, very difficult deficit on our hands, and a lot of really hard work to do this time next year for the next biennium. And I guess the only encouragement I can give you is to ask you to please stay engaged, because we realize that, you know, the governor often talks about public safety being his number one priority. And I think members of this committee understand that most of that is carried out at the local level. And when the fire department comes, it's local government. And when the ambulance comes, it's local government. And the governor often talks about that being his priority. But I think sometimes his actions don't show that being the priority. So thanks for the work that you do to keep our community safe. And I realize the state in recent years hasn't been a very good partner with you, and I want to acknowledge that. I'm not happy about moving this bill out of here. I'm going to vote for it, but under very much duress that we're having to do to continue to undermine the relationship between the state and our local governments. Any other questions, members? Would anybody else like to testify?
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. Senator Ortman, we honestly just saw this amendment, so I haven't fully analyzed this yet. So my comments are a little bit premature. But let me step back and just remind you, and I think this is consistent with what Chair Bach just mentioned, is that cities saw a $66 million unallotment in December of 2008. Cities saw a $64 million unallotment of 2009 aids. Cities saw a $128 million unallotment of 2010 aids already, based upon the governor's actions last year. So this is indeed another deep cut, and although we do view this as significantly smaller than the governor, and that is relatively good news, I just have to go on record and remind you that this is the culmination of several successive significant reductions in state aids to cities, LGA and market value homestead credit, and it is starting to have even before this proposal and before the governor's proposal, we're seeing cities coping with the loss of monies and, in fact, laying people off. And I think Mr. Flaherty will mention some more of that. I don't think the structure of the cuts makes much difference in terms of the 2010 cuts, taking it from MVHC first versus taking it from LGA. The cities have a set amount of money that can be reduced. So my initial read of that is it shouldn't make much difference for cities regardless of which pot you take it from first. Let me just say, though, that as you move out to the 2011 and 2012 cuts, you're extending the MVHC cuts to those cities that are affected permanently, as I read the bill, whereas the LGA formula is being allowed to redistribute the dollars that you have appropriated through the bill. And, I think the problem for those cities that lose MVHC is that it is a bit of a frustration that you certify a dollar amount of levy, and because of the lack of reimbursement, you don't get all that you tell the taxpayers you were levying. So I just want to go on the record on that piece as well. The way that market value homestead credit reimbursement works is that the cities don't get all of what they tell the taxpayers, in fact, that they are levying for property taxes. Mr. Chair, I would like to reserve any other comments. I'll cycle those to you directly as I further digest the bill.
Mr. Carlson, I had an extensive conversation with the House tax chair that what we're doing here in the out years is not totally honest. The taxpayers continuing to get the benefit of market value credit, but the city's not then getting the revenue. I tried very hard to see if the House tax chair might agree to actually change the market value credit formula so that we were a little bit more honest with the taxpayer. That just because they were receiving the benefit on the property tax statement doesn't really mean the state was actually sending that money to the city. And I've been unable to convince the House that we actually should modify the formula to be more honest on the property tax statement so that the statement more closely reflects the state's payment to the local unit of government. But I guess they won that. And this isn't quite as honest as I would like it to be, but there is a strong feeling on the part of leadership that the tax portion of this bill shouldn't be too far afield from each other so that we get into conference and have something that we just cannot conferee. So I was trying with the House tax chair to get as closely as I could. They won the day on that, that we're not going to take quite as honest an approach about the impact of this as I would have liked to have. So, I acknowledge that, this is not it's not as much pain for the taxpayer as it is for those cities.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Flaherty.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tim Flaherty, and I'm here representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. And, you know, obviously we thank you for your good work on that. The governor's proposal was an absolute disaster. But I do want to make just a couple points. And the property tax increases, which we've seen in 2010 already from prior cuts, and that will go on in 2011 and 2012, et cetera, are certainly bad and serious. But what I want to tell you is that the cuts in the cities are quite extreme. I can provide you with an article. I don't have it right with me, but, for example, Wabasha last night, small city, they eliminated two police officer positions. They put all their employees on two-week furloughs between now and the end of the year. Brainerd laid off six fire personnel last night. It's not just the property tax impacts. It is a very serious problem for public safety in Greater Minnesota. I'm just telling you that. I know there's nothing you can really do about it, but it is not. This is not just closing swimming pools for a summer. It's a lot more than that. So, you know, our cities are very upset about this. And obviously, this is a lot better than the governor's. So we'll just leave it at that. But even these cuts will take their toll, and it's not a good situation, and I don't think it's a good direction for the state to be going. So with that, I will, I don't know if this is just the first of many cuts you're thinking about this session, or if this is kind of the final budget deal. I really have no idea what you're thinking about on that, but I would ask you to consider the fact that the cuts have already gone way too far, in our opinion.
Mr. Flaherty, I've had a discussion both with the majority leader and with the speaker that my preference would have been not to be included in this early cut bill, that we just work on a tax bill later. I reluctantly agreed to participate in this early cut bill, and maybe Senator Pogwiller can speak to this, but my request of the leadership was that if the tax committee is going to participate in this cut bill to the tune of $105 million, we haven't seen any cut from the Education Committee yet. We haven't seen a cut from the Health and Human Service Committee yet. My request of them was that this be the extent of our participation in resolving the state's budget deficit, and that the other committees who have not participated yet fill in the rest of the gap. And I don't know, Senator Pogwiller, if you want to comment on that, but I think...
Mr. Chairman, that is accurate. You've been very steadfast in that, and it's the only motion I'm going to be making to cut local aids this year.
So, members, that is, it's the understanding that Senator Pogwiller and I have, is that this is the Tax Committee's participation, that at least my intent is that a second tax bill that comes out of this committee will be other provisions, and it won't be additional cuts in aids and credits. And I think you heard Senator Pogwiller say he's not going to vote for additional ones either. So, Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that conversation. That's my concern, the timing of this bill. Without seeing the rest of the budget bills, I'm very concerned that we're doing this. And even though you've put that out to us, we're still going to see more.
Senator Johnson, I certainly hope not. Senator Ortman?
Mr. Chair, I commend you for your efforts here to begin addressing the billion-dollar deficit. We haven't begun to talk about what happens if the $2.7 billion in unallotments are overturned. when I look at the summary of Senate File 3223, I see that for the most part the Senate has kept pace with the governor in each of the different budget bills. Adding in the $105 million that you're talking about today takes the Senate to about $315 million in cuts towards the $1 billion. If what you're saying is correct, then the rest of the cuts will come from Health and Human Services and Education. But we would like to see all of that instead of passing bills in peace. It'd be nice to see where those cuts are going to come from before we're asked to vote on a bill like this.
Wish Senator Cohen was here.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I'm thinking about what Senator Ortman just said. And I understand I'd like to see all of it together as well. But this, if you're saying, I don't know if you're suggesting that this is too deep a cut. I don't think anybody can guarantee that we won't have to make more. But if there are not cuts in Health and Human Services and Education, what would you have us do? I mean, there's an awful lot of at stake there.
Senator Ortman.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid, I appreciate the question. I know that there has been quite a bit of criticism of the governor's budget as draconian cuts. But if we make this change now and adopt the $105 million, we still fall $100 million or more shy of where the governor is at with these same budget provisions. So then you're going to have to cut more in Health and Human Services and Education than the governor has cut in order to reach a balanced budget. And I'd like to see where those cuts are being made. Or perhaps maybe there are other things. For many years, we've seen tax increase proposals that go along to pay for additional spending or to offset necessary cuts. So we're trying to see the whole picture. You're asking for bipartisan support, but you're going to have to include us in those conversations about what are your plans and where are your intentions to cut, how to pay for the services that we provide.
Senator Ortman, I will express that concern to Senator Cohen. I don't serve on education or on Health and Human Services, so I don't know what they're contemplating, but there is no question. There is I think it's pretty difficult to balance a $1 billion deficit and try to hold Health and Human Services and Education harmless. Frankly, I don't think it can be done. We'll see what those divisions come up with, but I'll say it again. The discussions I had with Senator Pogelmeier is this is the extent to which I would like to limit the tax committee's participation, because our participation impacts the relationship we have with local governments, and I think we've created enough stress there over recent years that I'm just unwilling to go to the governor's level in continuing that. Their budgets are set. They have no way to levy back in this current fiscal year. We're making this difficult enough, and I'm not interested in taking another bite out of them when they have no way to replace the money that the state is, they were counting on, and now the state is saying we're not going to send you. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Could you just spend a minute telling us about this proposal that kind of balances taking from LGA and market value homestead credit? And the only reason I ask is because at one time we had talked about more focus on market value homestead credit. This is different than that, and tell me more about how we came to this more balanced a proposal.
Well, the governor's unallotments back last July fell about 200,000 on cities and about 100,000 on counties. And then his most recent, and there's nothing we can do about that. Those allotments happened. Cities bore two-thirds of the burden of the unallotments. The governor's budget proposal then to us fell equally on counties and cities at about $125 million each. What this proposal does is it really mirrors the governor's budget in that it falls equally county and city, but where, and it's much smaller, it's $105 million instead of $250 million, but where it's different than the governor's, it's levy plus aid, just like the governor, the cut. But where it's different is it does not take local government aid first. The governor's proposal took local government aid first to the extent you had it, and then took market value credit. What this does is it takes market value credit first, and what that has the impact of doing is spreading the burden to more communities around the state. It's just an attempt to, you know, cuts the same amount from cities. They still lose the same amount of money, just that it spreads it to a larger number of cities. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I share the concerns that Senator Johnson had made mention of not having the full picture before us before voting, but in particular, I noticed that in being in Judiciary Committee, I'm very concerned about the public safety and the corrections budgets that have been cut. You may be aware that the majority's proposal, Senator Cohen's proposal that he adopted, more than doubles the cut of the governor in public safety. And as a result, it's not only affecting our Department of Correction institutions by about $4 million, but the governor's proposal was $4 million. The Senator Cohen's proposal recognizes $20 million cut in Department of Corrections. And, you know, having been once a line staff in one of those institutions, this will provide a greater risk of harm to the Department of Corrections staff, as well as the inmates and perhaps even the public at large. The other focus is the judiciary budget, which I don't agree with either the governor or the majority party. Once we start getting involved in cutting core functions of government, these are the core functions that aren't they're certainly recognized in statute, but the core functions of government, the rock core, are the things that are written into our Constitution. And the reason they're written into the state Constitution is that it guarantees the very rights of citizens before the court. And I believe that the priorities need to be reassessed before I would support this proposal.
We have the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogemiller renews his motion. Senator Cohen?
This is on A3 as
amended. On the A3. On the Pogemiller motion to adopt the A3 amendment as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no?
No.
No.
The motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman.
A3 is adopted. Senator Pogemiller.
I'd move that Senate file 3223 as amended be recommended pass.
What on the Sequoia amendment?
Call for a roll call, please.
Mr. Chair, do we adopt the Sequoia amendment?
It was an yes. Amendment to amendment.
Okay, thank you.
On the Pogemiller motion to recommend the passage of Senate file 3223 as amended, a roll call has been requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Dibble?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Lanceap?
Yes.
Limmer?
No.
Amarty?
Yes.
Boa?
Yes.
Portman?
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Shy?
Yes.
Senegum?
He's here.
Boy?
Yes.
Chair?
Chair votes yes.
Senator Senegum is present.
Oh, Senator Senegum, we have a roll call on Senate file 3223 as amended.
Vote yes.
Chair, I don't know.
I don't know the amendment, but coming in, I was going to vote no on this. No. Well, no. Senator Senegum votes no. There are 9 yeses and 4 noes. The bill is passed and sent to the floor of the Senate.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Senator Cohen.
I apologize. I was
chairing us, as Senator Sinchin knows, the spirit is here in my committee, but I appreciate the committee's action, and this is a good lesson for me. From now on, when I have a bill in front of this committee, I'm not going to show up, I'm not going to be around, and I just come in the last minute, the bill passes. This is great. Thank you.
Senator Cohen, don't be too confident you're going to have this many votes on the floor of the Senate.
I'm only speaking for the committee action.
Yeah, wait till we get there.
We're meeting when? Tuesday? Members, I believe we're meeting again on Tuesday. We've got a number of local bills, some local sales tax bills, and others. Tuesday morning. Until then, this meeting is adjourned.